broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Especially in a community with a lot of elderly citizens.
We're here to present Rand Paul with the Employee of the Month Award.
I've seen people who will have half of it and...
Lesbian, your mom's a lesbian.
Epic fail.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this mother. And through the looking glass we go and beyond, going places where other talk shows cannot go. Singularly unique, groundbreaking, Phil Hendry Show. Should fat people show affection on television? Well, one very popular magazine writer says it is a vile and disturbing thing. She's a writer for some jive-ass. I don't know, what is it, bud?
It's some it's a lady magazine.
Yeah. All right, some lady magazine. Nevada voters say Harry Reid was already checkmarked on their ballot. 877-876-PHIL. PhilHendryShow.com for all your Phil Hendry Show needs. Don't forget that our live streaming video of the show and live streaming audio of the show is on right now. And while it is disturbing to look at me on video, although I think I present a colorful eminence, our show's pretty interesting to watch as we perform it, as many people have discovered. So head over to PhilHendryShow.com and watch the most original radio show on the air today. So here we have Nevada voters complaining of problems at the polls. Reid's name already cast on ballots. I don't know what in the hell's going on there. I'm loath to think that there's any corruption, although probably there is less corruption today at the polls than ever before in the history of the country. And that's the irony. It is ironic, in my opinion, because most of the corruption, most of the fraud, most of the vote stealing, most of the malfunctioning machines, most of the malfeasance and out felonious behavior with regard to our voting, the voting system in this country probably took place prior to 2000.
Well, what are you talking about, man? I mean, they found out about Bush.
Don't give me this they found out about Bush thing. Don't give me that. You know, the vote was really, really close in 2000. So close that they had to start to hand count some of these ballots. Now, that's never happened, at least in memory, in this country for a presidential election. The closest election that I experienced in my lifetime, and I was 8, so...
Well, you didn't experience it. You were all probably crying and everything. You had to go to bed.
Okay, that's fine, but I'm not saying that I voted.
Yeah, but you didn't. What do you mean you experienced?
That I was conscious of was Kennedy and Nixon. I wasn't crying to go to bed. What do you mean?
They probably told you to go to bed early that night.
The point being that the Nixon and the... Now I forgot.
Who?
Nixon and who?
Kennedy?
Kennedy, yeah. That was a very close election. Now, just so I can say this without you butting in, bud. I'm not saying I voted. I'm saying that in my lifetime, let me put it that way. So the fraud and the vote fixing, good Lord, people. The idea that all of a sudden it happened in 2000, that's the first time. Obviously, people have taken advantage of that event to say, yes, it did start in 2000, and it was Bush who invented it. And there isn't any other way that, you know, people are going to be thinking. Nobody remembers Kennedy and Nixon, and no one remembers that there's a great line from the movie Nixon that was made by Oliver Stone about Richard Nixon. Now, Oliver Stone, I don't think, is a Richard Nixon fan per se, although it was a sympathetic view of Nixon. And in the film, as he's told that he's lost to Kennedy, Nixon's campaign manager walks up to him, and Nixon's considering disputing it. He wants to have a recount. He wants to put the country through that. And they say to him, no, you can't do that. Forget about it, Dick. They say they stole it fair and square.
What's that mean?
Well, I don't know what it means necessarily. I think what he was saying, hey, those guys, they out-dirty tricked us, man. They out-screwed us. You know, they out-manipulated us. They went and they bought the votes before we could. I think that's basically what he was saying. And with John Kennedy, it was a matter of manipulating a few ballot boxes in the Chicago area. There were a hell of a lot of votes, a lot of Catholics. Who knows? I don't know. But I'll never forget that line. It was a great line. He said, forget about it. you know, they stole it fair and square. You are not going to contest anything. You're not going to put the country through this. You're going to wait, and you're going to do it again. And so what we have in this country is a long tradition of some very shady practices when it comes to elections. And it was not invented in 2000. As a matter of fact, from what I know about 2000, after I've listened to all the horse dung that's been thrown about it, after I've listened to all the lies, after I've listened to all the propagandizing and all of the really sad and sick and stupid things that people have said about 2000, it was probably one of the most honest elections that ever took place in the history of this country. Honest. You got to be some kind of brain dead idiot to think some guy stole the election when it goes all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, you may have stupid people on the Supreme Court of the United States. You can argue that you've got people you don't agree with. You may say those people are the worst in the history of the Supreme Court. But you can't say it was stolen. You cannot. You can say it, but you can't say it with any hope that anybody's going to take you seriously about anything else ever again as long as you live. Now we come to the year 2010. And what do we got in Nevada? Well, now some people are complaining about the machines. Now, here's the thing that I think is interesting. We got in our rearview mirror, we have an event called the 2000 election, which is already very, very uppermost in our minds. We don't want to have to go through that again. So what do we got going on now? We got touchscreen. Now, touchscreen I've used professionally. I've used touchscreen in radio studios. We've had touchscreen in the broadcast business for 20 years at least. Now, the last time I used it, and I hope I never use it again because it's the absolute worst possible system for anybody doing what I do for a living, we used it at WCCO in Minneapolis. A CBS O&O, and, you know, like that mattered. And anyway, so I had to touch the screen if I was going to hit a commercial, touch the screen if I wanted a music bed. Now, that's pretty easy, but suppose I wanted to control the volume. I had to move my finger up and down this screen so that it would be, try to get it to sound like this. But instead, it sounded like this. So it's a very difficult system to use, using it for what I use it for. Now let's take, for instance, going to the bank. Well, now, you know they have a cancel button there, don't you? Why do they have the cancel button? Because touchscreen, even when you're using it with an ATM, is a very difficult thing. I'm not talking about the sun reflecting off the glass. Most banks, or at least most systems, have conquered that. But what they haven't conquered is something you'd think was pretty easy, which is, do you want to withdraw cash? Yes, I do. Hit that button. And you're hitting it 500 times before you find just the right place there on that little touchscreen. Aha! Bang! Then it finally takes. Now, if you hit it in the wrong place, suddenly you're not withdrawing cash. Suddenly you're making a $1 million deposit. And there have been times where it'll say, how much do you want to withdraw? Not here. Enter in the amount. Okay. And say I want 300. It's pretty easy how 300 turns to 3,000 real fast, you know.
Yeah, that happened to me one time. I was trying to get $100,000 or something. And I waited to see if they'd give it to me, but it didn't.
It ain't going to give you $100,000, man.
You're getting out in your account.
Yeah, I know. But if I put $100,000, it wouldn't even spit out some of it.
No, man, they ain't even programmed to do $100,000 out of an ATM machine. The point I'm making, though, is that it's so easy to make a mistake with those things, they have a cancel button. Now we go into the voting booth. We go into the voting booth, and we encounter problems. Now here, before I, you know, conclude, here's an interview with Channel 5 News. This is Joyce Ferrara. Channel 5 is in Boulder City, Nevada. Joyce Ferrara says her ballot, along with the ballot for her husband and several others at the poll, was already checked for Harry Reid, the crook.
When I looked at the screen had already was a cast for Harry Reid. One person, okay, that's a fluke. Two people, that's strange. Several within a five-minute time period of time, that's wrong.
Well, I don't know what she's talking about. I do believe her when she said it was, you know, punched for Harry Reid. And I believe that perhaps the same thing happened for her husband. She says several people in a row. Anyway,
one thing, are the old people lying or something?
No, they're not lying, but maybe they're seeing things on account of the way you know, their brains aren't working, and their brains are slowing down.
Anyway, Clark County Register of Voters Larry Lomax blames this on user error.
Especially in a community with a lot of elderly citizens, senior citizens, who have a little more difficulty going working their way through a touchscreen ballot. This election, I think, more than ever, the two sides are very fractured, and each side seems to be suspicious of the other, and we're kind of caught in the middle.
All right, that's fine. But what I would like to know with this touchscreen system is you can, and I believe you can, in Nevada, you can cancel it out and you can vote again. So that's a very, very important thing to know. But understand, just as this guy said, touchscreen, even for young people, even for just regular folks, is a tough thing to use because sometimes when you're seeing it for the first time, the sensitivity is such you can move your finger along the screen of that thing and it, boom, next thing you know, it's voted for someone that you didn't want to vote for. And you're thinking,
epic fail.
But not yours. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's get off this, man, okay?
Kind of depressing.
Anyway, Mel Gibson is getting ready to say he's sorry, but for what? Oh, I know. For being a scumbag? Okay, plus, should fat people show affection on television? A Marie Claire writer says no, if you've ever read Marie Claire. 877-876-PHIL, even if you haven't read Marie Claire. And if you haven't read Marie Claire, you're not missing anything. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
It's The Phil Hendry Show. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, and don't forget on our website, philhendryshow.com, every night we have a... Oh, hold on.
God, man. Where'd you hit the sneeze button?
There ain't no sneeze button. There's only a cough button.
Well, hit that, man.
I didn't think to. I'm sorry. There is a log...
Where?
A log on my website that we put on the website after every show so you can watch and see what we did on the show. If you want to look at our log and if you want to look at other shows and maybe you're looking for a particular show, check out the logs each day. You can go back down the news feed and find each day's log, and then you will find which day that broadcast was, and you can find that in our archives. 877-876-PHIL. Marie Claire is a blog, it's a website for women, fashion, hair, beauty, health, fitness, lifestyle, celebrity, career, money. I don't know whether it is a magazine per se or it is, when I say a magazine, a hardcover magazine that you can find on a newsstand, but it's certainly an internet magazine, so to speak. And Maura Kelly is a writer. Now, she writes an article, a blog, I should say, called My Year of Living Flirtatiously. She's tracking her dating life. Well, she wrote one. Should fatties get a room even on TV? And this is from today, I believe, right? October the 25th. No, this is from 2 days ago. She said, the other day my editor asked me, do you really think people feel uncomfortable when they see overweight couples making out on television? Because I can be kind of clueless. I'm not much of a TV person. I had no idea what she was talking about. So she steered me to this CNN article about the CBS sitcom Mike and Molly. As CNN explains, the show centers around a couple who meet in an Overeaters Anonymous group and has drawn complaints for its abundance of fat jokes, as well as cries from some viewers who aren't comfortable watching intimacy between two plus-size actors. So she wrote a blog, and she basically agrees. She thinks that she's grossed out looking at fat slobs kissing. Now, I don't know why, but when I look at her, she's a very attractive girl. And when I look at other slender people, I think, you know, that's great. That's healthy. And that's exactly what, you know, I'm working toward. I work out every day. But I don't know. I just like to make those people uncomfortable. I as soon as I hear that they've got a problem with something, I'm in favor of the thing they've got a problem with.
You kidding me, man? So you want to see a fat man? You want to see a fat man have sex?
No, I notice how you go to the fat man having sex.
Yeah, what's that about?
Well, he's the one talking about it.
No, I don't want to see a fat man having sex. But I'll tell you one other thing. Anytime television gives me a glimpse at the real world, I'm grateful. Now, a lot of people don't like that. They watch TV for one reason and one reason only, and that is escape. And the people who are involved in the producing of TV shows take that seriously. Yes, the people sit down, they want an escape. So they give people the mindless escape that they want. They provide them with stupid shows. I'm loath to judge a man's taste, but when you show me a show like, oh, I don't know, let's take one off the top of my head, Survivor, which, you know, Jersey Shore. I don't care, man. I mean, television has provided us with a long list of things that suck, basically. Television's also given us some damn good TV. But generally, that's on the pay channels like HBO and Showtime. Nothing on network television comes close to what I would call quality television, and I don't care what show you're talking about. Nothing. Nothing.
What about Glee? You don't get it about Glee.
I get it about Glee, man. I get it about Glee. There ain't a show on TV that I don't get it about. There's nothing to get, man. Do you understand? There's nothing to get. So whatever. It's pop culture at its best. It's taking the reality of life and putting it through a sausage maker. It's taking the extreme realities of life and shoving it into a sausage maker and making it all come out just homogenized on the other end. It's making lesbianism, it's making, gay people, it's making black, racial humor. It's taking all of that and making it acceptable. Ooh, sometimes a little bit on the extreme side, sometimes kind of, ooh, just a little bit scary. But never anything that's really going all the way subversive. There's a lot of fake subversive stuff on television.
Like what?
Like all of this bull crap about the Glee photo shoots. You know, that stuff is just tasteless. There ain't nothing subversive about it. There's nothing that's counterculturally revolutionary about it. It's just tasteless crap. You know, and I say that, excuse me, I hate to be old-fashioned, but I don't know, teenage girls, they're still underage, and sexualizing them seems a little weird. You know, call me crazy. Nonetheless, there's nothing on television that has anything revolutionary, anything new, anything exciting to say, not on the over-the-air commercial channels like CBS, NBC, or ABC, or Fox. Fox is probably the closest to something that one would say has pushed the edge of the envelope a bit. But when they put a show like Family Guy on, which not only is not The Simpsons, but is a step backward, and they seem to think they've really hit the ball out of the park with a hip show, sorry. Sorry. No, you ain't, man. No, you ain't.
Family Guy's bitching.
That's great, bud. That's good for you.
Yeah, man. You love Family Guy.
It's great, and you don't even know.
That's right. I don't know what's funny at all. You're right. So now we have Mike and Molly, a couple of fat people who kiss, make love, do whatever they want. Well, right away, I got to love that. Why wouldn't I want to love that? And what makes it even better is that there's people calling in and complaining about it. Who are these people that are complaining about fat people kissing on television? No life people? I mean, you ain't even paying for that garbage. You ain't even paying for it, man. You sit and you watch the commercials and you get, and you're watching Mike and Molly and they're fat and their asses wiggle. I love it, personally. Why? Because it's making, Mara Kelly uncomfortable. Her argument was that the show promoted obesity acceptable when it is costing our country far more in terms of all the related health problems we're paying for. Oh, is that right? I thought it was cigarette smoking. Now you're telling me it's obesity. You know, we better get our act together here and get, if that's the worst problem we got, I say we start smoking again on television. So here they are trying to be diverse. Did you guys ever, CBS, is that the network this thing's on? Did you ever think in your wildest dreams you'd put a couple of fat pigs on the air and they'd be making out and people would complain about your ever so earnest efforts at diversity? I applaud you, right? I applaud you. But I also know that you guys are so gutless, you'll take it off the air the minute enough dumbasses from Flyover America call in and say it's making them uncomfortable. And Maura Kelly. So I know it's going off the air, so I can't give CBS all that much credit.
Wait a minute, you like the show, but you're saying they're dumbass?
I'm saying the network, CBS, is dumbass, because while they might have made a courageous decision putting this on the air, money's on it that they will homogenize it enough so that it is acceptable. They're not in the business of doing anything other than pandering. Now, the American people don't know what it is they want to watch. They only know what they like when they see it. So you are in the constant, you're on the constant treadmill of creating something and hoping people like it. Now you create something that you figure, maybe people like this because it looks like people, real people, fat people. And guess what they find out? Fat folks and regular folks don't want to look at regular folks on TV. They want to look at regular folks, but they want to look at regular folks doing, you know, irregular things. Like two fat people not making love.
Well,
believe me, they do, bud. 877-876-PHIL, because I'm fat. Right back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry.
Will Mel Gibson apologize for being a douchebag?
World famous Phil Hendry
on the
show.
Line.
Yeah, just a minute.
All right, Margaret Gray is going to join us in a few minutes. She wanted to come on earlier in the program. I know that you, Margaret, are you there?
Yeah, Frank and I are. We wanted to do this earlier, Phil, and we had some problems, as you know.
No, I know that, but we're going to get you on so we can have you do the. You're going to demonstrate for us what you're going to make available as a download: some show tunes. Right.
Yes, we're not going to sync all of them, but I want to give people an idea of what we're going to be offering for the download, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's the download.
For download. These will be some of the songs that I can remember singing on stage as actors such as Richard Burton were off stage encouraging me. Richard Harris offstage encouraging me, Robert Goulet, and so forth. So I think people will enjoy it.
All of those actors were in Camelot.
A lot of them were in. You're calling it Camelot. I don't know.
Cameltoe.
Frank says it's Cameltoe.
How old are you?
How dare you ask me that?
All right. So forget about how old you are. You got this guy telling you that one of the biggest, longest-running, and most successful musicals in Broadway history was called Camel Toe.
Yeah. I don't know.
Look, you're saying it's not Camel Toe. He thinks, like you do, that it's Camelot.
Who's he?
Margaret.
Oh, I forgot you confused genders.
What?
Never mind. No, it's Camelot, not Camel Toe.
I don't know.
All right. Phil, the first... Excuse me, I'm very emotional tonight because of what you put me through.
Margaret, I didn't mean to put you through anything. You were the one that was saying that your son... you were the one saying that you had to carry pepper spray because you were afraid your own son might rape you.
And I still hold to that belief. Now, I'm not going to go through this again.
All right, fine.
Now, the song that I want to do, this is an example. And this is from Camelot. I have often walked down the street. Would you tell those asses that...
Shut up!
We've got a lot of people leaving the streaming, Phil. I don't know if you can hear me.
I can hear you fine.
I have often walked down the street.
You don't shut up, son. I'll lock a door and set fire to something.
It's got that. There's the one right there.
Hey, you!
Get her.
You! Shut that door!
I have often walked. There she goes now.
Will you come on, Margaret?
Well, there's one girl making.
Yeah, I got her.
Yeah. Screw with my singing, huh?
What did you do?
Never mind. Don't worry what I did.
All right.
I forgot the song.
I have often walked. What is it, on the street where you live?
From Camelot.
It's not from Camelot. It's from My Fair Lady.
Your lies, Phil, are... They're enjoyable and they're entertaining, but you know what? They don't move me at all. I'm not getting down on my knees for those.
It's not a lie. On the street where you live is from...
Cameltoe.
From Cameltoe. It's from My Fair Lady.
Yeah, I'll bet she is. I have often walked...
You know what? I'm not even going to mess with it.
You'll have that bar.
But why do you always tell me I hung up on some? I know I hung up on her. I saw that I hung up on her. You know, every time I hung up, I hang up on David Hall. You go, you hung up on him.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could cause you get complaint.
From who am I going to get a complaint?
From Ms. Gray.
I don't care. Ask me if I care that I get a complaint from her. Every time I hang up on somebody, I don't need you telling me you hung up on them.
Well, I just want you to know, because the line go dead.
Yeah, I know the line go dead. Oh, man.
What are you laughing at?
You talk like a freaking idiot. You know that? Anyway, Mel Gibson gearing up to say I'm sorry. Hangover director speaks about axing Mel. After the shocking news that the cast and crew of Hangover 2 wanted nothing to do with Mel Gibson because he hates Jews and 90% of them are Jewish, the actor himself, I'm kidding, he didn't say that, but it's basically true, the actor himself is starting to realize that remaining silent, why do I have lockjaw tonight? The actor is starting to realize that...
Yeah, and you're blind, too.
And yeah, I am blind. The actor is starting to realize that remaining silent is doing him no favors in the eyes of the public. And, of course, the Hollywood producers that hold his career in their hands. How could a guy who has produced and directed two Academy Award-winning films that were monumental moneymakers, like The Passions of Christ and Braveheart, how can this guy's ass be in the hands of Hollywood producers? Anyway... That's why the fallen star is getting ready to tell his side of the story, sources tell PopEater.com. Since the second the tapes were released, every media outlet, including this site, has been contacting Mel's people asking for an interview, an insider says. Now, after months of silence, Mel has finally realized if he doesn't say something really soon, it might be too late. The days of burying his head in the sand, hoping this whole ugly mess goes away, are over. Now, Mel has his pick of any outlet, and everyone from Oprah to Letterman and The Today Show to The View have all made it clear that they would love to give him a venue to spill it. However, sources close to the actor say Mel wouldn't go on The View because he's got to sit next to a black woman. He's not sure whether Letterman's a Jew, and, you know, there's a bunch of other stuff. No, it doesn't say that.
Are you sure, ma'am?
No, it doesn't say that. However, sources close to the actor say Mel would rather sit down with a man this time around, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, he wants to sit down with a man because every time he get interviewed by a woman, they lie. Oh, they lie.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Well, no, I don't think it's because they lie. I think it's because he's going to come off looking like a bully or something, man. So if he sits down with a guy, you know. But see, Mel Gibson has this really intense demeanor. And when he sits down with a cat like Matt Lauer, or if he sits down with any of these guys, Letterman would be good. Letterman, I think you should do Letterman, Mel, because Letterman is like you, man. He's just this, he's a dude with a chip on his shoulder, too.
That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah. He should go on Letterman. Letterman's got a chip on his shoulder. He's ready to kick someone's ass. He can't stand life, and I don't blame him. And he needs to go on a show like that with a cat like Letterman's going to understand, man. Not go on with one of these candy asses like Matt Lauer. Excuse me, Mr. Lauer, but, you know, it's true. Or go on The View. That's death, man. He's going to have Joy Behar sitting there who say, you know, they'll just be cheering her ass and, yay, Joy, way to do it. And what's going to happen is Gibson will wind up strangling her to death. It'll be like the Nurse Ratched scene in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest as Jack Nicholson was just pounding Nurse Ratched's head on the floor.
Yeah, and you'll hear Barbara Walters going, no, Mel, no, stop, stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, no, Mel, stop, don't do it. Remember like in Cuckoo's Nest, what's his face? Harding kept saying, no, Mac, stop, Mac. And he's just choking her. That's what would happen.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about that's what would happen. If Gibson goes on The View, that's what happens to Whoopi Goldberg or Joy Behar. Gibson turns into Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and he's choking the hell out of her. All right. Here is, on a podcast called Comedy Death Ray Radio on October the 15th, actor Zach Galifianakis hinted at what we now know was Mel Gibson's appearance in Hangover 2.
But a movie that you're acting in, you don't have a lot of control. I mean, you just show up and vomit your lines out. Yeah. I mean, I'm not the boss. I'm in a deep protest right now with a movie I'm working on.
Really?
Up in arms about something, but I'm not making any leeway.
Really? Is that the, I know you're filming the the...
It has something to do with a movie I'm working
Breath.
On. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell you about it later.
Okay. I'd love
it's
to hear
about
it.
Very frustrating.
Here is Tony Potts, co-host of Access Hollywood, talking to Headline News' Showbiz Tonight about the argument that it's unfair to boot Gibson from The Hangover 2 when convicted rapist Mike Tyson starred in the first one.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Okay, thanks. No, here it is.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors. It's comedy is tragedy plus time. And I think that, you know, that Mike Tyson...
Actually, that wasn't Woody Allen. That was...
Alan Alda.
Alan Alda.
Woody Allen had a great line in Crimes and Misdemeanors. It's comedy is tragedy plus time. And I think that, you know...
dumbass.
That Mike Tyson had time, 17 years. Does it make it right? No, absolutely not. And also, think about this. Why would you want to put one roadblock in the way of people possibly seeing your movie next year? Giving them a reason not to come see it. There's a big divided opinion about Mel Gibson in the public, in the movie public. So if I'm Warner Brothers or if I'm the cast or whomever, why would I want to put that one more thing out there to say, you know what, I'm not going to go because Mel's in it. So the comparisons to Tyson, I think, are a little dated.
Boy, you are so wrong, you dumb clown. First of all, the public doesn't care. The public will go see Mel Gibson. The public doesn't care. If Mel Gibson was in The Hangover 2, it would not affect the box office at all. It'd bother the actors. It might bother the studio. It might bother people that you got to party with, but it ain't going to bother nobody out here in public land. Okay? And the what do you mean the Mike Tyson comparison is a bit dated? What's that supposed to mean? I mean, the cat went to prison, okay? He did time for a rape. I think Gibson is a warped and damaged guy, but I don't think it makes him much different from 50% of all American men. 50, I said. 50! I think if you don't recognize that in Hollywood, you guys are making a big mistake. And I know what you're saying. You're saying, well, even if American men are as warped as you say they are, Mr. Henry, perhaps we can show them the way. Well, if you're thinking that way... You guys need a whole new way of looking at things. But Mel Gibson's attitudes, especially fueled by tequila, I believe probably that guy holds them pretty close because his old man's a freak. And God knows what Gibson's problem is. But the average American man, if you ratcheted Mel Gibson down a few notches, you pretty much got the average American man. White and black. White and black. And Jewish. So, you know, I think the guy needs... There's no question this cat's got to, you know, clean his act up. No question at all. There's no question he's got to remember he's a public personality and he's got to behave as such. There's no question that whatever his beliefs, he has to temper them because he works in a commercial marketplace. He works in the world of selling a product to the public. He's got to remember that, man. Nobody goes to see your movies, Mel, to kiss your ass because we think you're so phenomenal. We go to see your movies because you make good movies. People go see you in The Hangover because we want to see what you look like as a tattoo artist in Bangkok. I think you'd probably be pretty cool. Liam Neeson? Anyway, but nobody goes to see your flick because you're some kind of god. We don't give a damn, man. People got way too much to do. You make a good movie, and we go see them. And you've made some great movies. And the other thing I don't think you have to worry about is whether producers hold their career in your career in their hand. Who cares? So you're only going to be able to bank $3 million a year instead of $7 million. I don't know how much... You're having to pay your ex-wife. How much they're going to make you pay this chick? You know what, man? Let that be a lesson to you, you dumbass. Moving in with women. You know, they're having your baby. What the hell do you think is going on anyway? Errol Flynn, the days when the studios got rid of these problems for you. The studio ain't going to get rid of nothing for you, man. They want to see you drown. Wake the hell up, Jack. And remember, you know, you may think that your stuff doesn't smell... Driving 100 miles an hour down PCH with a tequila bottle between your legs, you need a freaking psychiatrist. Other than that, You're my kind of guy. All right, is it unconstitutional to prevent teachers from adding their students as friends on Facebook? ACLU says it just might be. ACLU says that these strange adults should be able to contact your children without your permission and without your knowledge. That's what the ACLU says, because the ACLU wants to be even more hated. They want to be even more disliked. They want to be even more misunderstood than they are today, and they will continue not to explain themselves at all. And if they try to, it sounds really high-minded and really stupid. 877-876-PHIL.
Right on, Mr. Henry.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Wow.
Phil Hendry.
Is that Robert?
I don't know. What if you got kids around and they had a vegetable? You know, that would be a beautiful world.
That's ridiculous. No kid going to go get a vegetable.
Are you talking about that Hidden Valley Ranch thing?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, man. I think I'd get a kid want to have a vegetable.
I wouldn't want to do it.
Well, okay. I think what most people understand, Bud, most kids like ice cream. They don't like vegetables. I think what Robert is saying is, wouldn't it be a nice world if kids ran to a vegetable wagon, you know?
No. What would that be about?
Because a kid want to have a vegetable.
So what if you want to have a vegetable? That'd be a retarded kid.
Oh, will you stop with the retarded, okay? What do you mean a retarded kid?
Yeah. If a kid want to have a vegetable instead of ice cream, that good?
Not necessarily.
What are you guys talking vegetable? It's called vegetable. All right, Michael Jackson is the top-earning dead celebrity. We've got a list here very quickly. I'd like to tell you who the top-earning dead celebrities are. Isn't this great? This is, you know, you can't... I'm telling you, there's so much space and there's so much time and there's so many readers and there's so much to fill up on the internet, you're going to have to fill it with something. And now we have a list of the top 10 dead celebrities. Number 10, Richard Rodgers. Richard Rodgers was, I believe, a songwriter or a lyricist. He and Oscar Hammerstein, they wrote such greats as The Lady is a Tramp, My Funny Valentine. Richard Rodgers makes $7 million a year. Am I right about that? What is this list representing? All right, anyway, George Steinbrenner, $8 million a year, is at number 9. At number 8 is Albert Einstein, $10 million a year. Dr. Seuss's Theodore Geisel, $11 million a year, number 7. Stieg Larsson, who is a novelist who wrote The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and other crap, $15 million a year. John Lennon, $17 million a year, he's number 5. At number 4 is Charles Schulz, $33 million a year. Man, he's still milking that Lucy and Peanuts thing, huh?
Yeah, there's no accounting for taste.
Anyway, number 3, J.R.R. Tolkien, $50 million a year. Number 2 is Elvis Presley, $60 million a year. And finally, Michael Jackson at $275 million. He is the number 1 dead-earning celebrity. Another asinine list. These are the TV ratings. I'm kidding. Who won Monday night? ABC's Dancing with the Stars. That was Monday hour by hour. And what about last night? Man, we got last night? Oh, wait a minute. This is last night, Monday night. Anyway, 8 p.m. was won by ABC's Dancing with the Stars. 9 o'clock, ABC wins again, Dancing with the Stars. 10 o'clock, ABC wins again with Castle. So they kicked ass. All right. In Norton, Massachusetts, teachers are being warned not to friend students. The ACLU argues this may infringe on teachers' freedom of speech. The perverts that teach the kids in Norton, Massachusetts, want to friend kids without the knowledge of the parents. Yes, these sick animals. Anyway, in the hazy realm of cyberspace, one school district is drawing a sharp line. Virtual friendships between teachers and their students are a bad idea. I think that that is a very wise choice. I certainly don't think they should be contacting kids without the knowledge of the parents. Worried about the potential risks of online interactions, the school board in Norton last week urged teachers not to become friends with their students on Facebook and other social media sites and advised them to avoid friendships with former students as well. Tom Galata, who's a school board member, said the ban is designed to maintain a divide between teachers' professional and private lives and send a message that becoming too friendly with students is not acceptable. Now, this is a school district, so we're talking about underage students. Under the policy proposed by Patricia Ann Say, public school superintendent, teachers are urged to contact students only through the school's electronic system and not give out their cell or home phone numbers. Norton's restrictions mirrored statewide recommendations. The policy urges superintendents to periodically conduct internet searches to see if teachers have posted inappropriate materials online. I like that idea. However, Chris Ott, communication director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts, said the policy potentially infringes upon the teachers' freedom of speech. Teachers and students have private conversations all the time, he said. It's not clear why electronic conversations are different. Oh, gee, Chris, well, because they have private conversations on campus. On campus. Not private conversations through the cyberspace. Not sitting around on the phone, jawjacking, with their feet up on the desk, having themselves a Triscuit or a Wheat Thin. The recommendation that teachers not be Facebook friends with former students seems excessive, he said. Paul Toner, president of the Massachusetts Pain in the Ass Association, said the policy seemed blunt but well-intentioned. Generally, we don't like flat dictums, he said, if you pardon my language. But I think it's good advice for teachers to maintain... By the way, I do have a flat dictum, he said. But I think it's good advice for teachers to maintain professional boundaries. Teachers are role models, Toner said. And he said, by the way, if you need any toner, I'm your guy. Ha, 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 he said. And then he said, they need to act the way that, you know, you got to, like, earn respect, he said, and then passed out. I used to tell my students, I'm not your friend, he said. I'm your teacher or your lover.
He didn't say that.
No, he didn't say that. You know, look at Teach. Just get it together, okay? Your students are your students. You're not going to have any cyberspace relationship. Tell the ACLU that, as well-meaning as they are, and I'm sure they are, to shove it deep and wide. Charles Wagon is our technical director. Of course, our associate producer, screener Dan Northcraft, and our producer is Jason Rance. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com for all of your Phil Henry needs. Later and greater.
Phil Henry.